Anyway, Andy, what music are you going to have?
I'll surprise you.
Because I don't want to clash with you.
All right, mine is from Donkey Kong.
Ah.
Donkey Kong Country. Did you put the same one?
Guess what?
What?
My favourite.
Oh, crap. Welcome to the UK's number one retro gaming podcast, The Retro Asylum. This is episode 12, and I'm your host, Andy, and joining me is the one, the only...
Len83100! Hello, everybody!
Hello, matey. How are you? It's been a while since we recorded.
Oh, it has been a while, isn't it? It must be about 4 weeks, 5 weeks now?
Yeah. It has been a while, so I'm settled into my new house. But guys, before I carry on any further, let me quickly tell you the lineup for the show. So basically, we're going to tell you a little bit about what we've been up to, what we've been playing. We've got some site news, and then we've got the Glenn versus Andy SNES Music Challenge.
The Music Challenge.
Yep, and then we've got the topic of the month, which is the Super Nintendo, where we will talk a little bit about the Super Nintendo, and then we'll round things up. So, Glenn, let me ask you that question. What have you been up to then, buddy?
What I've been up to recently is that I went to Bridlington.
Okay.
It's like a seaside town near the east coast of Yorkshire. My girlfriend has a caravan there. So last weekend, I went over there and spent a nice good weekend with a girlfriend at the caravan. Done all sorts of walks and been to Scarborough, walked around the city centre.
Yeah, you've been there before, haven't you? Because I think you've mentioned it previously on the podcast. You've been down there.
Yeah, I go there every 4 weeks.
Oh, do you? Wow.
Because their mum and dad has a caravan on the site. They pay £2,000 a year just to have it on that site.
Wow.
Do you know, the weather was absolutely brilliant. It was a bit foggy in the morning before I went to the car boot. But after about midday, it all cleared up.
Did you pick up any retro stuff on the car boots?
There was retro stuff at the car boot, but it's all football games and stuff. And yeah, actually, at that particular car boot, I have seen a Mega Drive and a Saturn and original Nintendo. But the trouble about car boots is if you go to somebody who specializes in games, they're more likely going to charge fancy prices. You best, when you go to a car boot, go to somebody who probably has a stereo display and he's not particularly know-it-all about games, and usually you could get it for a good price that way.
Yeah, because you got, a Dreamcast a few...
For £8.
For £8 and loads of games.
And it works brilliantly.
Wow, I'm so jealous, because I think I paid about 30 quid for mine. So, I'll tell you what, Glenn, let me tell you a little bit about what I've been up to. Now, I've moved into my house last month. I've finally done all the flooring, Glenn. That's all I've been doing, basically. All I've been doing is work.
DIY,
and I'm crap at it, Glenn. I really am. But that's about it, to be honest with you, Glenn. Honestly, I've got a few more weekends that I've got to do a few things for the house. I've got to do the turf next week on the garden. Then the week afterwards, I've got to do the loft. I've got to put some flooring up there as well.
So, hey, I hope your wife's helping you.
Yeah, no, she is designing a few little things because she's very arty, so she's designing the cover for the sofa and a few other little things.
Is she the one that's in charge where all the things go around the house with all the tables and chairs and beds? Is she in charge doing all that?
Definitely. I mean, you'd come into this house and you wouldn't even know that a guy lives here because it's bit of a woman house, actually.
Yeah.
I did sort of draw the line. I said to her, look, my Xbox is going to go underneath the telly. And she goes, but I don't want it showing. And I'm like, no, the whole house is you, and I just want my Xbox there.
Just tell your wife that if you put your Xbox there, it will overheat, and then the red rings will appear.
Yeah.
That's a great one.
Right, so anyway, Glenn, before I carry on with this, actually, you know what I forgot to announce?
What have
you
forgot to announce?
The podcast is going to go weekly.
Oh, it's going to be weekly now.
Yeah, so hey. I've had a few messages, people going, oh, Andy, you know, you might burn yourself out. But I have come up with an ingenious plan, which I'm not really going to say how I'm going to do it weekly, but it's an ingenious plan, and it should be nice and simple, nice and easy, and, you know, it should be weekly. And hey, if I miss a week, I'll miss a week, you know, no big deal, but that's the way it's going to work now, weekly podcast. So, what have you been playing then, Glenn?
I've not really been playing a game such. What I've been doing recently is I've been making my Dizzy game. And I tell you, that has burnt me out.
How many months did you spend on that?
About since Christmas last year. So it's about 4 to 5 wow. months I've been spending on this game.
And you finally finished it, and it's actually up on the site now.
Well, the reason why I decided to do a 3D Dizzy game, because on Yorkfoot, there's only one 3D Dizzy game, but that's come out a good few years ago. And everybody's been chatting and talking on the site saying, can anyone do a 3D game? And I think, yeah, that's a challenge. Can I make a 3D game? And I've succeeded.
Fantastic.
It's brilliant, actually.
You know what? I haven't had the opportunity to play it, but again, there's like a little link on the post of, it's called Dizzy in 3D Land, I think it's called.
Yeah, and what you have to do is you have to go through stages, and you don't collect diamonds anymore. Now you have to pick up objects like books and pickaxes and gold, and you have to get to Zack's castle and rescue Daisy from the evil wizard Zack.
So it plays exactly like the 2D Dizzy games, but in 3D now, is that right?
I would say it plays better than the previous two games.
Wow, so yeah, should be interesting, mate. So guys, I highly recommend, give it a go, and I promise you, Glenn, I'll give it a go, and by the time we do the next podcast, hopefully, fingers crossed, I would have played it. So let me tell you a little bit, Glenn, what I've been playing. I've basically, Glenn, been playing on my PSP.
What have you been playing on your PSP?
I've got loads of emulators on it, Glenn. I've got absolutely loads. And basically, because I haven't got any time to do any retro gaming at home, because, you know, I've got to do stuff around the house, or I've got to spend some time with my wife, or I've got to go and see my kids and so on, I basically find that the PSP is fantastic when I've got to commute to work. Because my commute to work takes me about an hour. So I've been playing
an hour.
So because I live outside of London now. So it takes me an hour to get to where I work. And I basically sit there and I play classic games. I've been playing quite a few, actually. I finished two games, Glenn, in the last couple of weeks. I finished Mickey Mouse Castle of Illusion.
Do you remember
that one?
There was a Mickey Mouse on the PlayStation and the SNES. Was it the SNES version?
No, Glenn. Honestly, the Castle of Illusion, I can't believe you haven't played it, Glenn.
I haven't played that one, though.
Shame on you, Glenn. It's like one of the greatest platformer games ever, and it still looks amazing. Basically, Minnie's being kidnapped by a witch, and it's up to Mickey to go and save her. And then what he has to do is going on this adventure, which is very similar to like a Mario game. You have to jump on people's heads and collect things, and it looks amazing, Glenn.
What system was it on?
On the Sega Mega Drive. But there was a scaled-down version, which also came out on the Sega Master System, which was similar, but it was a slightly different game, but it played equally as good, Glenn. I can't believe you haven't played it.
Well, I have not played that one. Well, there's millions of games out there. I can't possibly play them all.
You know what, Glenn? I honestly reckon once we finish recording, you need to play it or check it out on YouTube, and you will be stunned how visually amazing this game looks. The other game I've been playing, I don't think you've played this either then, Glenn, is World of Illusion, which was a sort of follow-up to the Castle of Illusion, and this time it was a multiplayer, or you could play it as one player, and you could play this time as Mickey and Donald.
Go, was it with you in Disney games recently?
I don't know. I don't know, honestly. I'd remembered playing these games before, Glenn, and my God, they've aged fantastically. The better game, I would say, is Castle of Illusion, but World of Illusion, Glenn, is amazing graphically, Glenn. I was playing it, and I was just like, I cannot believe they managed to achieve graphics like this on a 16-bit console. It's unbelievable. It wouldn't look out of place on a modern console, you know, on a 2D game. It's that good.
Is it like Rayman?
I think it looks just as good as that, mate. Honestly, just as good. You know, and it's got some amazing music on it. Absolutely amazing music.
Got to check that out.
This is Matt Denaris. When the modern world is taking its toll on me, I tune into Retro Asylum Podcast.
So, Glenn, why don't you give us your bit of news then?
Do you know the legend, Colin Jones?
Yep. If you can remind us, listeners, you know, who might not know who he is.
Well, do you remember he made a game called Rockstar Ate My Hamster?
Wow, I used to love that game.
Do you remember,
Glenn,
that game? Yeah, I think you did an 8-bit Wars or something on that once.
Yeah, I did a review on it, Glenn. I mean, have you played that game much at all?
I have. You're like a Simon Cowell.
Exactly, yeah.
you hire somebody to sing, and you got to manage the budget and plus get the singer to be famous.
Yeah, I mean, you can select from a bunch of characters. Well, I think there's like about 12 or 13 or 14 different characters, which are all based on celebrities from back in the day. You know, you had like a Michael Jackson, you had like a Elton John, Madonna. And you could put them as, you know, single stars or have them being in a super group. And you had to make them play gigs. And it worked really well, Glenn.
It did for a Commodore 64 game. It worked very well. And it was also on the Spectrum as well, isn't it?
Yeah, and it sounded fantastic. It's one of my favourite games ever on the ZX Spectrum. Now, what else did Colin Jones actually make?
Slightly Magic. And I have to be honest, I've not played that one.
Oh, Glenn, you know what? You have to play Slightly Magic.
Slightly Magic.
No, honestly, you have to. If you love the Dizzy games, and like Little Puff, you have to play Slightly Magic, because it got released by Codemasters, and you're like a little magician, and you have to go around solving little puzzles, and it plays like Dizzy and Little Puff. You would love it, Glenn. Honestly, ooh, you would absolutely
that sounds
love
good.
It. But yeah, so why did you mention Colin Jones, then? What's Colin Jones been up to?
Well, Colin Jones has recently gone back making computer games.
And what games sort of format now is he making games on?
Well, he's going to make the games on the iPhone.
Right, okay. And any idea what his new game's called?
Well, his new game's going to be called Clockwork Mouse.
Right, so you can find that, I'm sure, on the App Store. So, yeah. Guys, definitely check it out. Because, you know, I'm sure that game's going to be fantastic, because his previous games were absolutely awesome. Let me give you a little bit of gaming news, Glenn. The ZX Spectrum is nearing 30 years old, right? And there's like a little meetup at the BFI on May the 5th and 6th, and that's part of this Sci-Fi London thing in London. So you should definitely check it out. There's a website, and it is imperiaca.com/horizons. Yeah. Basically, they'll be talking about the ZX Spectrum. They'll be having loads of different things there. So if you're into your specy and you live in London and you're free on the 5th and the 6th, I'd definitely recommend it, because it should be a good day out.
Do you know, they should do one for the Commodore 64, because the Commodore 64 came out the same year as the Spectrum, 1982.
Yeah, I'm sure someone actually has done.
So the Commodore 64's also 30 years old this year.
Right, so happy birthday to both the little 8-bits. Both of them were fantastic.
They both lasted a long time, because they were from 1982 all the way into the early 90s.
It's amazing.
Before they stopped making games for them. If that won't happen now.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, guys, I would highly recommend that you check out, go to the BFI, and that's on May the 5th and the 6th, and help celebrate the 30th birthday of the ZX Spectrum.
Of the legends, the Commodore 64 and the ZX Spectrum.
Yeah. All right then, so why don't you give us another little bit of gaming news then, Glenn?
The other gaming news is Play Expo's coming back.
Right, so this is formerly known as Replay Expo, is that correct, Glenn?
Yes, it was previously Replay Expo, but now it's called Play Expo. Don't know why, but that's what it's called now.
Now, we went to Replay Expo last year, and we had one hell of a time down there.
It was absolutely amazing. I would like to, if somebody who's listening to this podcast now, who's donated a machine or donated anything to Replay Expo, thank you very much, because thank you for trusting us with your equipment.
But yeah, I mean, last year when we went down there were so many systems that I had heard of but never actually played on. So there was hundreds and hundreds of people, hundreds of machines, loads of classic arcade games. And best of all, there were so many people there that are big retro gaming fans. So, you know, it was really nice hanging out with these people and talking to them and so on.
And I love to go on the 3DO when I was there. And also went on the ColecoVision and hold the pad wrong.
Oh, yeah.
Because do you remember when I did a video and put it on my YouTube page?
Yeah.
And I was saying, this control's wrong. And then I had loads of messages going, you idiot, you hold the controller wrong.
Yeah, but, you know, you weren't, you know, because, you know, you hold that control pad a little bit different. But, yeah, going back to Replay Expo, it's now known as Play Expo, and it's being held at Event City on the 13th and 14th of October 2012, and that's in Manchester.
Manchester? Oh, thank you. Manchester's only a 40-minute drive from my house.
I know. So me, Swainy, and all the other guys, we're going to have to sort of make our way down there. But guys, I highly recommend that you definitely check this out. The tickets haven't been announced. I think they're well worth the price. So definitely check it out, because I'm sure us guys will be there, and we'll have some sort of little meet-up. But more on that next time, then.
Yeah, well, I'm really looking forward to that. I hope I can turn up on Saturday or Sunday, because I had a really good time last time.
Yeah, definitely, mate. All right, so I've got one more little bit of gaming news. And this bit of gaming news was passed from Swainy, from someone from another forum. And they said, can you give us a little shout-out? And this is Game Hack. Now, Game Hack are having a little thing on the 28th and 29th of April at Pinewood Studios. Now,
so what's going on there?
Let me bring up the page here. It says, what is Game Hack? It's an overnight hackathon at the world-famous Pinewood Studios, and it's all about making games, big, small, native, web, single or multiplayer. And it says, who should come? Developers of any language, gamers, if you're an artist, musician or a designer, you know, come along to Games Hack. And it's really good the way they've done it, Glenn, because what you do, you get a free coach from Paddington. They're actually forking out this.
Gosh.
Yeah, so if people that live in London, you make your way to Paddington Station. Let me find out the details for this. Okay, so they're running a free coach from Paddington Station to Pinewood Studios, which is leaving at 8:30, and that's on the Saturday. And that will take you all the way down to this hackathon, or whatever you want to call it. So definitely check that out.
That sounds
28th.
Really, really good. I find out at these game festivals that it's not like a football match where everybody's like, we're really rough and there's police everywhere and there's just chaos. There's just, it's very relaxed and everybody's just enjoying themselves playing games. It's just, that's what I really love about these things.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's just because so many people are into the same sort of thing that everyone's in a good mood and just happy to be there.
Yeah.
All right then, Glenn. So I'll tell you what, why don't we move on to the next section?
The next section, competition.
Now, I'm still running this competition, and you can be the winner of a little Mega Drive handheld, which is made by Blaze, and it's the Streets of Rage limited edition, and you can win this. So you know how you can win this, guys? Head on over to the forum, you'll find a little thread, and you can enter it, and all you have to do is just come up with a retro gaming joke, and Swainy and I will pick the winner and announce winner on episode 13, and then I'll post it to you. So yeah, you know, we've had some great entries, some really funny jokes.
I can't imagine making a game joke, but if somebody could make a good one that makes us laugh, well, it's worth winning the Sega handheld.
Yeah, it's got 18 games, Glenn. It's got some of the best Mega Drive games. It's got Streets of Rage, Streets of Rage 3. I think it's got Sonic.
Oh, very good.
Sonic and Knuckles, I think it's got. Altered Beast, Golden Axe. It's definitely worth it. And I thought I'd let everyone else know as well, we've got some amazing prizes coming up soon. Swainy sorted us out with an amazing prize, and I think we're going to give, I'm not going to tell you what it is just yet, guys, but we'll give this other amazing prize, announce it on episode 20 of the Retro Asylum podcast.
You see, if you listen to the podcast, you can win some great prizes as well. That's an extra treat.
Exactly, matey, exactly.
Hello, everybody, this is Damien, and you're listening to Retro Asylum, the best retro gaming podcast.
Our next section is the Andy versus Glenn SNES Music Challenge.
Right, who wants to go first?
I'll tell you what, Glenn, why don't you go first and tell us what your track is, tell us a little bit about the game and what you like about the music, why you've chosen this particular track.
The track I've chosen for the Super Nintendo is the Ghost Valley track on Mario Kart.
Now, why did you pick this particular track, Glenn, though?
What I like about this song is when you go around the track, it's a really, how should I explain it? I like it because it's a very catchy tune when you go around Ghost Valley. It makes the atmosphere spooky. Not scary spooky, but it has that spookiness to the music. Mm-hmm. It's one of my favourite tunes ever. So when you go around Ghost Valley, it's like do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do.
Well, you know what? I cannot remember it, but we'll listen to that track right now.
Thank you.
Now, I'll tell you what, guys, my track that I'm picking, and again, guys, remember, you can comment on the actual podcast itself. Tell us which music track you prefer. Do you prefer Glenn's choice or my choice? Now, last time we recorded the podcast, my choice won, Glenn. Last time we did the C64, I think people preferred my choice, Glenn.
Oh, it was yours, Andy.
All right, let me tell you what it is. It is the, I don't know what this track's called, but it comes from Donkey Kong Country on the Super Nintendo. It's the underwater level.
The underwater level, Donkey Kong Country, that game has some amazing sound effects.
It is. I mean, I remember, I say the reason why I've chosen this, Glenn, was that I found that the best couple of games came out on the Super Nintendo towards the end of its lifespan. I mean, I was blown away about how amazing Donkey Kong Country looked. It took the gameplay of, say, Super Mario and just gave it those amazing graphics and amazing music. And it's just, a lot of people couldn't believe that it was running on a Super Nintendo. A lot of people thought it was running on N64 hardware.
It's amazing how they've done it. I don't think even they use the FX chip, if I remember.
No, I don't think
they didn't even use the FX chip to bring out all the colour, all the effects for Donkey Kong Country. It looks absolutely fantastic. And when you look at games like Rise of the Robots, and you see how rubbish the gameplay is, and then when you see Donkey Kong Country that has like just good graphics like Rise of the Robots, it really proves that it has the gameplay, it has the sound, it's a really good game.
Right, so yeah, the reason why I've chosen the underwater level, Glenn, is because, I mean, I've just found it really atmospheric. It really enhanced like being under the water, just swimming along. It was really mysterious and really, you know what, so I'll play this track now. And again, guys, once I've finished playing the track, comment on the site, let us know, do you prefer Glenn's choice or my choice? Enjoy the music track. Thank you.
Our next section is topic of the month, and the topic of the month this month is the Super Nintendo.
Right, Glenn, so why don't you tell us a little bit about the Super Nintendo, why you like the Super Nintendo?
What I love about the Super Nintendo was an amazing 16-bit games console. It came out in 1992 in England, but I think it came out in Japan and America about 1990-91. Mm. I don't know why we had to wait so long for the Super Nintendo to come out, but it was worth the wait for me. It had some amazing games. It had Super Mario World. It had F-Zero. It had, we just mentioned, Donkey Kong Country. And it had a lot of good games that were also on the Mega Drive as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it also later on had the FX chip. So you had 3D FX, like on Star Wing and Stunt Racer FX. And it even had Doom. I don't think even the Mega Drive didn't have Doom, because I think the Mega Drive's Doom were on the 32X.
Mm-hmm.
So it really did pull off some really good games.
Now, one of the things you forgot to mention there, Glenn, now the Super Nintendo was Nintendo's first outing into the 16-bit machines, and it really, if you're a Nintendo fan, seeing some of your favourite Nintendo characters appear on the 16-bit was just stunning. I mean, you went from Super Mario 3, you got Super Mario World, you went from Castlevania to Super Castlevania, you had your Zelda games, and then you had, I think, A Link to the Past, all these famous, you know, Nintendo characters really excelled when it came out on the Super Nintendo. The games were just out of this world amazing at the time.
It was brilliant, and I actually do prefer the sound on the Super Nintendo to the Mega Drive. I know that's debatable, because a lot of people like the Mega Drive sound chip, but I myself prefer the Super Nintendo sound chip.
Yeah, no, definitely. But now, what sort of benefits, what made the Super Nintendo better than the Mega Drive, apart from the sound chip?
Well, for me, what I liked about the Super Nintendo, and this is maybe a silly reason, but it's one of the reasons for me, the Mega Drive brought a lot of, like, add-ons, like a CD add-on and a 32X add-on, and that just, you had to fork out an extra 100, probably even 200 quid, I don't know how much it cost at the time, to get those equipment. But the Super Nintendo didn't go down that road. They were going to bring out a CD-ROM drive for it, but they scrapped it.
Eventually became the Sony PlayStation.
It became the Sony PlayStation. And what I like about it is that they added the Super FX chip into the cartridge. So you had these games that otherwise didn't have this FX chip, which would be almost impossible on the Super Nintendo, like Star Wing and a Stunt Racer FX. It was an absolutely amazing console. And I think it was one of the first games consoles to have a button on top of the pad.
I think you're right. That was one of the things I wanted to get to in a little bit. I mean, one of the things I wanted to say, Glenn, was that the Super Nintendo had over the Mega Drive was the amount of colours. I think you had, 32,000 colours?
Oh, of course, yeah. It did have a lot more colours than the Mega Drive.
So I think the Mega Drive, you could only pick from a couple of hundred, and it only showed a certain amount of colours on screen. Well, although the Super Nintendo had a lot more colours, you know, it looked visually a lot smoother, it looked a little bit nicer. It didn't look as blocky as some of the Mega Drive games, but it was slightly slower than the Mega Drive, you're saying, with the processor.
It's the processor. I might say it wrong, the actual models of the processor, but the Mega Drive's processor is faster than the Super Nintendo, and there's certain games you probably notice more, like on the Mega Drive, sometimes there's more objects on a screen than the Super Nintendo. To me, it's not a biggie.
Now, the other thing we were saying there before, Glenn, that you touched upon slightly, was the control pad. Now, that was an ingenious little device, basically, because before that, you know, the control pads were either three buttons like the Mega Drive or two buttons like the Master System and the NES, really.
For the Super Nintendo, it had four colour buttons and two buttons at the top.
Yeah, the shoulder buttons, yeah.
And for games like Mortal Kombat, that were brilliant because you used the top buttons to do certain moves.
Yeah.
Just, I don't know how it's done on the Mega Drive.
Now, did that, you know, when you first played on the Super Nintendo, because I was talking to Swainy about this, and he said, you know, he found it really confusing playing on the Super Nintendo because, you know, he'd only been used to playing, you know, games with the one button. I mean, I found it disorientating at first when I was playing games like Super Mario World, because you had the shoulder buttons, you had the run button, the spin jump, the normal jump. It was a little bit like confusing at first.
I think because the age I was at the time, because how old were you when the Super Nintendo came out?
I have no idea, probably about 11 or, no, maybe a bit older than that.
See, I was something like, I think about 8 or 9 when it started to become popular. I think by that time, when I first got hold of the Super Nintendo button, I didn't find it confusing. I actually got used to it very quick, and I think the first game I played on the Super Nintendo was at the Arndale Centre, and they had, like, this Nintendo booth, and they were advertising the Super Nintendo, and they had loads of Super Nintendo games, competitions, and the first game I actually played was Bugsy the Bobcat.
Wow. I wouldn't say it's the greatest game, though. It was a poor man's Sonic, unfortunately, and I know you're a fan of Bubsy, but I'm not too keen
on it.
Bubsy
1 was good, but the other Bubsys were garbage, to be honest.
Yeah.
Especially the PlayStation 1.
You know what? I want to get into a little topic of conversation here, Glenn. Now, if you can tell us, like, maybe your 5 favourite Super Nintendo games, and then I'll tell you my favourite Super Nintendo game. So I'll let you go, be your top 5.
My top 5 Super Nintendo games. Yeah. I say Starwing was one of my favourite games on the Super Nintendo. Now, if I remember right, you didn't like that very much.
No, it was made by Argonauts. I mean, it was pretty decent. You know, at the time, I enjoyed it and played it. But it wasn't, in particular, my favourite game. It has dated pretty badly, actually, that game. But the gameplay's still there.
But how I see it is that a console like the Super Nintendo actually made a game like that. Mm-hmm. And otherwise, it would have been impossible. So I like Starwing. It was I found it absolutely amazing game at the time.
I know it wowed people. It expanded the lifespan of the machine, basically, because the 3D was coming out quite a lot, and by making a 3D game on the Super Nintendo, it made people think there's still life in the Super Nintendo, which it did. It added a good few years to the little machine.
It certainly did.
All right, let me try and think of a number 4th game for me. You know, I'd go for Super Castlevania 4. That's what I'd go for.
Oh, I know you like your Castlevania games.
Yeah, now Castlevania, the reason why I like it, Glenn, was I was a fan of the 8-bit Castlevania games, but you know, they were somewhat limited. Then I played this one, and everything had been enhanced. Everything was a little bit better. The music was phenomenal, really creepy, really haunting. Graphics were a lot better. I mean, at first, the graphics, they're pretty impressive, and as you start going on to maybe the 4th or 5th level, everything just gets even better. You know, you start getting chandeliers that start swinging around.
Good use of Mode 7.
Exactly.
Forgot to mention this. It had Mode 7.
Yeah, that was one of the famous tricks it had, you know, up its sleeve. It was Mode 7, but wowed everyone. So, all right, move on to your next game then, Glenn, your number 4th game.
Well, my number 4th favourite game was Donkey Kong Country. Now, we already talked about that game, and I explained how amazing it was, and how did the Super Nintendo make a game like that? I couldn't believe it, but that game was absolutely amazing. My friend brought that round to my house and said, hey, check this game out, put it in the Super Nintendo, switched it on, and I remember seeing it appear, and I will just look at the Super Nintendo thinking, how on earth is it doing that? it looks that good.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, I hadn't seen anything look that good on any system ever. I think everyone was wowed by this. Let me tell you what my next game was, my number 4, Zelda. Zelda for Link to the Past. Now, tell you the reason why I like this game, Glenn. Zelda 1, I know people are going to hate me for this, I thought was average. Zelda 2, I wasn't a big fan of.
What's that in 2D? Was in 2D, and a lot of people didn't like that one.
Yeah, because it was more like it weren't overhead view, it was, you know, like a Mario-style view. And then the third Zelda came out, which was on the Super Nintendo, and everything just felt right. A nice story, really easy to get into, and the graphics were nice to look at, the puzzles weren't too difficult, and every time you played it, you got that little bit further, and the music really helped. And that's when I really fell in love with Zelda, and I thought that's when Zelda really came into its own, when it arrived on the Super Nintendo. All right then, matey, so why don't you tell us your next game?
Well, my third favourite game was actually a collection pack, Mario All-Stars.
That's slightly cheating, but yeah, I can understand why.
What I really like about Mario All-Stars is it had all the Mario games that were from the NES, and they put it onto the Super Nintendo. And they didn't just port it on, they actually improved it. They actually got the graphics and redid all the graphics. They made it look 16-bit. It looked a lot better, and he also featured the Lost Levels that was supposed to be Mario Brothers 2
that
in
we
Japan.
Didn't get over here. Yeah, we didn't get it over here, and we were lucky enough to have it there. What did you think of the Lost Levels, by the way, Glenn?
It was harder. It was a lot harder. I remember playing it and I think, God, this is hard. And I remember the first thing I did when I played Lost Levels is you start the game, you hit the block, and a mushroom comes out, and it's like a blue one. And I think, oh, it's a mushroom. You can have this mushroom. What's into it? He died. I went, what? He died by a mushroom? Found out that you don't pick up that mushroom. It's an evil one.
It's an evil mushroom.
Now, what I like about Mario All-Stars is, at the time, they were around about £30 to £35 per cartridge. Yeah. Now, I wasn't working then. I was round about 9 years old or 8 years old at the time. And I can't afford to go out every month or every 6 months and get a £35 game. So what I love about this, and this is added bonus, it's not just one game, four games in one cartridge. And it's four good games, not like Action 32, but it's all rubbish.
I completely agree with you, Glenn. I think it was great value for money when you consider that each of these games came out on the NES for pretty expensive, because NES games were really expensive over here, and Super Nintendo games were expensive as well, and you got, you know, a nice compilation there. Probably the best compilation there is on the Super Nintendo, actually. All right, let me pick our number three choice. I'm going to go for Super Ghouls and Ghosts, Glenn.
Oh, Super Ghouls and Ghosts.
I'm not too sure, you know, if it's a sequel or a remake or whatever it is, but I thought it was fantastic. It had, again, arcade-style graphics. It was different to the arcade machine altogether. Completely different levels, completely, you know, different characters. But that game was ultra-tough, Glenn. I remember when I first got it, I kept on dying, but I kept on going back to it, And eventually, I finished that game. And a few months ago, Glenn, I tried to play that game again. I couldn't even get off the first level. That's how tough that game is.
Do you find that the older games are harder than the modern games? Because I find the modern games, they don't have lives.
No, yeah. But I think, you know, games back then were made harder to give you a bit of a more of a challenge.
Because, yeah.
You know, if you were going to spend, what, 40, 50 quid for a game, you had to get your money's worth.
Oh, know? Definitely.
And especially a game like Ghouls and Ghosts, which technically was an arcade game, and arcade games were made difficult so that way you would spend your hard-earned cash, and since it was an arcade conversion, that's why it was tough, I guess. Alright, so why don't you tell us about your second favourite game?
Some people are going to be surprised. It's Super Mario World.
Ah, okay. Why number two and not number one? Wow.
Well, I will tell you later why it's at number two. What, we mentioned this game on the last podcast, you know, it's one of my ultimate favourite Mario, well, it's actually my favourite Mario game of all time. The replay value of this game was absolutely phenomenal. It had all sorts of different hidden levels, and it had all sorts of weaponry and stuff to collect. You also have a dinosaur called Yoshi, and it had all sorts of different types of levels, like a volcano levels and a ghost house and an evil woods. It was absolutely brilliant game for the Super Nintendo.
Can I ask you something, Glenn? Now, in Malk and Tony's podcast, the Things Like That podcast, they actually said that they prefer Mario 3. They said Mario 3.
That's a good game too, but I prefer Super Mario World.
Why do you prefer it over Mario 3, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, the reason why I prefer it over Mario 3 is because I like all the nice hidden stuff they put into the game. And also, it was the first 16-bit Mario game, and it showed what the Super Nintendo was capable of. It was one of the main games that came out at the time. The reason why I like Super Mario World better than Super Mario 3 is because it was like the first game that really came out on the Super Nintendo. It showed what the Super Nintendo was capable of. Now, don't get me wrong, I did like Super Mario Bros. 3. It was a fantastic game, but I prefer Mario World. It had, to me, a really good replay value on. And I also like the interactive map that you go around. I know Mario Bros. 3 has a map, but I prefer the map. The map was really big and lots of colours and the atmosphere of the game. I really do prefer Super Mario World.
You know what? I agree with you, actually. As good as Mario 3 is, I prefer Mario World. And we've got to mention, Glenn, that Super Mario World came bundled with a Super Nintendo, which basically made the Super Nintendo a must-have machine to own. If you got yourself a Super Nintendo, you got Super Mario World thrown in for free.
I didn't get Super Mario World with mine.
No, you didn't?
No, I didn't. What did I get with mine, if I remembered? I think it was Mario All-Stars I got with mine.
Right, okay.
Anyway, what's your number two, Andy?
I'm going to have to go for F-Zero. as my number two game, Glenn.
Oh, I love F-Zero. That was a great game.
Yeah, now a lot of people prefer Super Mario Kart for the Mode 7, you know, and it had Mario in it. I preferred F-Zero, and the reason being was the amazing soundtrack, the bright colours, the speed that the game went, the way the roads twisted and turned. It looked very futuristic, and it was the ultimate futuristic racing game up until, like, you know, Wipeout came out a few years later.
Oh, I loved F-Zero. That was a fantastic game. It did show what Mode 7 was capable of.
Mm.
It definitely did. But
yeah,
what I used to do a lot is I used to go over the ramp. I used to just come off the course and land and smash on purpose. So I liked how it did that. It would fell down and boom, and it blowed up.
Yeah, but I just remember the music, some of the music on the Super Nintendo. I should have gone for that, actually. It was my music choice, because the music in F-Zero, the soundtrack was phenomenal, Glenn. But you're right, going around certain corners, and if you boosted and you went over a ramp, you timed it wrong, you would go off the edge and you would explode, and you're like, crap. So, what is your number one game, Glenn?
My number one game, you already said it, Super Mario Kart.
Haha, I had a feeling it might have been. Why did you like Super Mario Kart so much, Glenn?
What I love about Super Mario Kart, it had great replay value. It had great tracks. It had, what's it called? The Mushroom Cup, and it had all the courses on the Mushroom Cup. It had Mario Circuit. It had Ghost Valley. It had a Bowser's Castle. And it didn't just have that. There was also other cups. I think it had like a flower cup. I think there was a star cup as well. And if you completed all that, it also opened up an extra cup, and you also get Rainbow Road on that one, if I'm correct.
So what made this game, Glenn, better than, say, F-Zero, in your opinion?
Dude, the main reason why it was better than F-Zero, because if you had a friend around your house, you plugged another pad in, and it was absolutely fantastic with two players. You had a battle mode where you go around and you have to pick up weaponry and beat your opponents by shooting weapons and getting their little balloons gone round the cart. And it also, you could go through all the cups with two player mode. So it was an extremely challenging game. And I remember as a kid always having my friend around the house, and a game we used to always play on the Super Nintendo was Super Mario Kart. And
you know what? I completely agree with you, Glenn, because I think I didn't rate it because I never actually played much multiplayer of it. It's a great game, don't get me wrong. I've only ever really played it one player. I never got into it like multiplayer, so I think I missed out on a lot. I did.
It was certainly a great game. I also did like Mario Kart 64. Some people didn't like that, but actually I did like that game also.
Yeah. All right, let me tell you what my number one choice of game is. My number one choice of game was Street Fighter 2, The World Warriors.
Oh, that was also a great game on the Super Nintendo.
Yeah, now the reason why I loved this game so much, Glenn, was because I was a huge fan of Street Fighter 2, the arcade game, and I couldn't believe when I found out it was coming out on the Super Nintendo. And when I saw the screenshots of it, it looked identical to the arcade game. It sounded, at the time I thought, identical to the arcade game. And I even got this game on import, Glenn. So I must have spent about, 90 quid or 120
pounds.
Quid? Yeah, to get it on import. And then I also had to get a converter, which I had to put a PAL game and then put the other game, Street Fighter 2, there, and so I could play my imported version.
You just couldn't wait, could you?
I couldn't wait because I think it came out a good few months before it came out over here. But it was amazing, Glenn. It played like the arcade game. It sounded like the arcade game. I got to be Ryu, Ken. You know, it was a great game. It's probably the greatest beat 'em up ever. And again, I think it was the Super Nintendo, Glenn, had amazing titles like the ones we mentioned, which really did make it sort of like stand head over shoulders above pretty much anything else. The big names.
Now, I ask you this question about the Super Nintendo. Do you think it was more successful than the N64?
I would say, yeah. Reason being is, I think it was just the N64 really should have gone onto a CD format. You know,
yes, I agree with you.
Everyone was expecting it. It was cheaper to produce. Not that many games. Whereas there was a huge amount of great games on the Super Nintendo. There were some great games on the N64, but it wasn't as good.
The games were outrageously expensive at the time, isn't it?
Yeah.
Hi, Guy, and welcome to my special guest appearance on the podcast. I've never done anything like this before, so just bear with me. Basically, you might know me as Lafarius on the Retro Asylum forum. You might possibly have bumped into me in the past before on YouTube. I used to keep a rather regular and rather rambling YouTube channel with gaming videos and so on until I basically gave that up. Switched over to, a website of my own, which I'll talk about in a bit. Basically, Andy asked me to appear on the podcast, answer a few questions and just talk about myself. Put you on the spot a bit, really, because how the hell do you jump into something like this? I suppose probably the first one, question I was asked by Andy, was basically, how did I first get into gaming? Well, I mean, I'm 32 years old. I think I must have been about 4 or 5 when I first got a Commodore 16. I mean, oh, that was the Spectrum days back then. My parents weren't exactly rich or anything, and it was second-hand, wasn't it? Sure, a lot of people back then suffered, as it were. But yeah, I mean, it introduced me to the likes of Pac-Man, and I think it was Rob Harris's Paint Program and the Commodore Chess and classic Cops and Robbers. You know, that was another classic. That was the beginning of it all. Then I went on to bump into a neighbour who had an Atari 2600, and it just went from bad to worse. I think a few years after that, I mean, I got a Spectrum on my own, and then the rest is history, of the say. Well, once you get that gaming itch, it just takes over. Now, myself, I run a Nintendo website. Well, basically, it's all about the NES, 8-bit console and everything, but how can I say this? I didn't actually have one as a kid, which might sound weird for someone who spends so much time writing reviews and stuff and all the rest of it, but out of all the retro consoles I've ever played, it's always been the one that's brought me back on, you know, I've been able to pick the pad up and just have that quick play section and just absolutely fantastic fun, and in the end, I just got around to thinking, well, you know, what sort of presence is there on the web for the UK? And there was just nothing. So, yeah, I just wumbled on into creating a website. So there you go. But, I mean, that, as nobody should be surprised, probably my favourite game of all time is going to be a NES game. and I'd have to pick something like Darkwing Duck by Capcom. Now, I'm pretty sure this used either the same engine or something similar to Mega Man 2, but the same sort of style, the same similar controls. The only difference is the weapons are, you know, you pick them up on the spot rather than go through a menu option. But the music for it was another plus as well. Absolutely fantastic. It just matched the cartoon and, you know, had that dark atmosphere and a little duck running around with the duck and then with the cape and the lightning gun shooting at the bad guys. It's very childish, but I still love it to this day. It's probably not even good a game, but, you know, once you're addicted, you're addicted. But yeah, I'm sure a lot of you would probably go for something classic like Super Mario if you were looking at a NES, but like I say, personally for me, it's got something that's got that right mix of nostalgia and is a lot of fun. Good music, perfect blast, everything like that. So yeah, for me, if I was picking a favourite game, Darkwing Duck, I'd recommend anyone try to sit down. As I said earlier, I don't want to toot my own horn here, but I do actually run a NES site called nesbit.com. How can I say this? It's hard to describe. I mean, initially when I kicked it off, there was about 300 UK PAL games to work my way through, but I was pretty determined to create a site that was not like any other fan site where they usually kick them off, they do a couple of reviews and get all the excitement and draw people in, and then they get a couple of months down the road and get bored of it and then just stop updating and it all falls apart and it might look fancy and so on, but, you know, if it's not got the work or the effort behind, then they usually fall to one side. But I wanted to do something different. And I think I did, because before I even got around to designing the site, I actually sat down and wrote, my goal was to write 50 reviews for various NES games before I even launched. And I think when I totaled it up at the time, I'm like, the word count, I think I had about 40,000 words. And I did that in 3 months. I mean, it was like writing a mini novel. And plus a few articles on top. I mean, that's a good while back now. That was when I launched. It would have been October time-ish, 2010, and it's just gone from strength to strength. I mean, I know that Andy's had them on the podcast with the Olivers. I managed to get an interview with, thanks to Andy, I forgot about that. But I got an interview with Philip Oliver a while back and just asked him about his days with the Nairs, and as you would expect with the side. But just, you know, asked him a bit about Dizzy, all the usual stuff. But it was a great chance to actually talk to somebody like that and be able to ask him questions. You know, they were incredibly open. But yeah, what am I saying? Just go to the site and have a look at it. There's plenty on there. I mean, it's not just plain old game reviews. There's loads of articles. One I wrote myself recently was the top 25 or top weirdest things about the Legend of Zelda series, a Super Mario Brothers movie review, things on the PlayChoice 10, you know, that multi-choice arcade cabinet. Oh, there's loads on there, fellas. Just go and have a look. And to top it off, there's I've even got a forum of my own to wonder about. There's about 200 people on there at the moment, and it's a nice little community that's pretty much been built by me pestering people all over the place. But I've been listening to Retro Asylum now for, pretty much since it started. I sort of wandered over from the one-hour monthly podcast show, which I quite enjoyed at the time, but I mean, since Andy and Swaney and Glenn have taken on the whole Retro Asylum, I think it's actually a lot better. The quality, they'll probably kill me for saying this, but the quality's improved. I don't know what it is. It just, the whole thing, it just seems different and it feels more professional. But I really do enjoy listening to this. They've really put put themselves in gear and come up with something special. One thing I did run with Nesbit for quite a while was a magazine. Basically, the community got together and wrote some articles, reviews, that sort of thing, and we, about 3 or 4 months, managed to pull together like a full printed issue, which we sold at the replay event back in November. So I think that's the first time I actually met Andy and Sweeney. Glenn as well was popping around. But whilst I was there, I got chatting to a guy who was working for a publishing company, and that just went from, as pretty good as you could expect, really. We got to talking about a few different ideas about retro publications and, you know, special magazines that come out, so on and so forth. And then after a while, because I had access to quite a lot of writers to what I'd already done with Nesbit, started giving the idea that maybe we could attempt something bigger on a much bigger scale. That little conversation turned into probably 3 or 4 trips to a pub. Lots and lots of ideas on what we could possibly do. And in the end, we decided to come up with a printed and a PDF version of an actual proper magazine. And we've been working like crazy on this now since the beginning of December. And it's now March. It's literally an everyday thing. There's so much to talk about. The first issue is due to come out around about the middle of March. But obviously we're working on this on our own. We've just a small team of writers and a couple of designers. It's not a huge team, but everybody involved has got a love of retro. It's something they all want to do. You know, they're not being paid just to do a job. Basically, that's all coming together, and that's going to be called Pixel Nation. And that's the first time you've heard it, folks. It's going to be pixel-nation.co.uk when it eventually launches. I mean, if you go to the site now, depending on when the podcast comes out, it'll probably just be a bit of under construction. But we are literally a week and a half away from launching, and I'm really looking forward to that. The first issue with this magazine, we managed to get an interview with Bob Wakelin of Ocean. He used to do like all the covers for like New Zealand Story, Rainbow Island, that sort of thing. Trying to think of another absolutely fantastic fan we had. I probably shouldn't be giving all this away so early, but I'm quite excited about it. We managed to get an interview with the actor and actresses, who played Zelda and Link in the Legends of Zelda 80s cartoon, that really terrible cartoon show that I'm sure everyone remembers on GMTV. It took some effort to track them down. A big thank you to Michael Levy, who was a chap from the RG forums who got involved with that. But yeah, it's going to be, print-wise, it's going to be like 100 glossy pages. It's an actual book rather than a magazine, because we wanted it to be something people can like carry around with them, take on trips and stuff. And the plan is to start releasing it on a quarterly basis. I mean, it's going to be pretty special. I say we're not some like huge publishing company. It's just a group of retro heads we've got together to design this, but we want to get as many people involved. There's going to be a forum, and we're gonna build off that. And, ooh, what else can I say? Yeah, actually, I've just remembered one thing I do want to do, because I've always been involved in the community sort of thing myself with the whole Nesbitt magazine. I wanted to launch something where people could publish their own stuff, where they don't have to go to a standard publisher and then, well, you know, go through all the rigmarole of getting it checked out. Is it any, you know, is it good enough for just for them to publish, to match their catalogue and all the rest of it? So I came up with something called the You Publish. Sorry if this sounds like a bit of a sales pitch. But the idea behind it is people come to us, you know, we'll design a cover for them, we'll proofread it for them, and we'll host it on the website, and they can sell it as a PDF, and they can also sell it as a printed copy, because obviously we're publishing other books, we can sneak these new published documents in, assuming we get like enough interest and pre-orders and stuff. But yeah, it basically just gives people a chance to get to our massive retro audience, because we're going to, well, I'm saying that now, but we are going to push absolutely crazy wherever we can. Magazines, not just forums and stuff, we're going to appeal in all sorts of places. I mean, we've got some big advertising lined up for this. I really, really, really want this to work. So, yeah, so I didn't mean to go off on a tangent there. I didn't want to take too long about this. But, yeah, please, guys, just keep an eye on that. It's Pixel, PIXEL, -nation.co.uk, which is coming soon. And just a thank you to everybody else on the Retro Asylum scene, and I'll see you all around the forums.
Alright then, matey, I think we should start wrapping this up then.
I'd like to thank everybody who are giving us iTunes reviews. We're down the number one retro podcast now. So thank you very much, everybody.
I wouldn't say we're the number one retro gaming podcast. We're the UK's number one retro gaming podcast.
I put the UK up front. UK's number one retro podcast.
And speaking about iTunes, we've got another iTunes reviews. We now have 22 iTunes reviews. That is absolutely amazing. And our 22nd iTunes review, Glenn, is by Damien from the site. And he put, fantastic as always, 5-star review. Fantastic podcast, guys. Keep up the great work. Makes a very pleasant addition to the weekend.
Oh, thank you very much.
So have you got any thank yous or anything you'd like to say to anyone else?
Well, I'd like to say thank you to you, Andy, for giving this opportunity to come onto the podcast. I'd like to thank, you know, Swainy, Mount, Tony, and everybody on the Retro Asylum website.
Thank you very much, Ben. You know, again, I'd like to say thanks to yourself. I'd like to say thank you to Swainy. I'd like to thank all our community, actually, because they're really supportive. They're always behind us. They're always commenting on people's posts. They're always sort of on the forum. So, yeah, definitely. And, guys, we shall see you next time on episode 12 and a half. We'll find out more about that next week. Goodbye from
me. Take care, everybody. Goodbye, everybody, and take care.
Right, my number two. I haven't even figured this one out, Glenn. Bloody hell. Can't think of a game. Right, I'm going to have to edit a little bit of that, Glenn.
I think that one went well. Don't know about you.
Alright, so if you can bring up your little schedule then, and I think we'd best rock and roll, Glenn, because
we've got a lot to do.
We've got a lot to do. We've got an hour and 20 minutes to do. If my wife does show up, well, we're going to have to cut it short and we can almost sort something out. Really? I think the Oliver twins might have something to say with that.
I don't think it's that good. The Oliver twins.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you, Andy.
Right, okay. Yeah, I've basically start again. Well, Pinewood Studios, basically, I think that's where they used to make all the films. And I'm sure they used to make Carry On films down there.
Oh, right.
Oh, bear with me. Is that my wife arriving? No. I should have thought about this through earlier. Let's see. What could I go for? Okay.